Welcome to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping Orange County, with your host, Don Camber.
Hello, I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Don Camber with another great guest impacting our community in a positive way. Today, I welcome Big Brothers Big Sisters of Orange County and the Inland Empire Chief Executive Officer Sloan Keene. Thank you, Sloan, for being on Impact OC.
Well, thank you, Dawn, for having me. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
You're committed to strengthening the organization's impact on disconnected youth across Orange, Riverside, and San Bernardino counties. Please go over the four program models that involve one-to-one mentoring of youth.
Oh, I'm happy to, Dawn, and thank you. You took the words right out of my mouth. What differentiates Big Brothers in the world of mentorship is that we really focus on that one-to-one component. So we call them sort of platforms. So regardless of the platform that we are operating on, that unique one-to-one connection is always first and foremost. So our traditional platform, or the one that most people are familiar with, because we have been operating on it for over a century. So we're the largest and oldest mentoring organization in the country. And that is what we call our traditional program. So caring adults out in the community like yourself raise their hand and identify themselves as individuals who want to make a difference in an underserved child's life. And so what we do is we talk to you, we interview you, we learn everything about you. We screen you, and then assuming you are the amazing person that you are, Don, we would then match you with a little sister. And what my team does is support you out in the community. And so that is our what we call our traditional community program. Then right next to it, we have what we call our site-based portfolio. So what that means is alternatively not in the community, but actually on site. Which I'm guessing your next question is, how are you doing that during COVID? So we'll get there next. But we have a workplace mentoring program where we take high school students and we provide them corporate mentors. And in a normal world, we take them once a month to the corporate campus. We also have high school students who mentor elementary school students. So in essence, it's peer-to-peer mentoring from a youth-to-youth perspective, but it gives our high school students who come from all walks of life an amazing opportunity to really understand philanthropy from the inside out and become mentors themselves. And hot off the press, we just launched our College Bigs program. So we are taking first-generation college students and applying them to mentor high school students. So kind of like a full circle of mentorship. So most of our high school students who are in our program, whether they're mentoring or are mentees, are first generation to graduate from high school and move into that college environment. So very excited to be able to offer these first generation college students as mentors.
You also have couples.
Oh, yes. So within our traditional community program, you can be a singular entity, so a man or a woman, or you can join as a couple, which happens to be very, very popular. Most of our volunteers are most successful in the program when they're either pre-children or post-children. So we have a lot of empty nesters who are big couples, in addition to some of our young couples, pre-children. But it is a great way to enjoy the program with you and your committed spouse.
And how are you able to do this during COVID?
Right. I mean, it's definitely shifted. It's definitely shifted our program model. I mean, from a program that prides itself first and foremost on connection, you know, a lot of that face to face, we have had to shift to virtual. You know, at first it was not ideal, but what we did find that in a disconnected virtual world, connection is paramount. And when you have strong relationships, certainly supported by my staff, relationships find a way. So we have effectively launched what we call now virtual friendships. So obviously, if you were previously matched, you can communicate via any way that isn't in person. But we also have really amazing people out in the community who, during this pandemic, during this health and economic crisis, have raised their hand and said, I have some time, I have some interest, I'd like to be a volunteer. And while we can't do that in person right now, we have launched virtual friendships. So we are able today to continue to match disconnected youth with caring adults just in a virtual environment until we can get to the backside of this.
Talk about the so-called disconnected youth.
This is nothing that anybody doesn't already know, but you know, the youth that we serve pre-pandemic were already disconnected. They were already living under the poverty line. You know, they were already coming from single parent homes where mom most likely is doing the best she can to keep a roof over your head and to keep her kids safe, but had to kind of deprioritize things like education or future career. What we've seen during the last 10 months has just amplified every single issue and problem that our youth have historically always faced. And with the schools closing, you know, for good reason, that has just continued to isolate most of the youth within our underserved communities. School, most people think of school as education, right? That's where my kid goes to get to learn how to read and write. But for the children we serve, school could be the only meal you get during the day. School comes with teachers and services. They are the eyes and ears of what's going on at home. What is most likely should not be going on at home. It's a safe environment. There's a lot of safety nets there. School provides connection. School, you have your teachers, you have your friends. When you live in a community where, you know, your whole world operates one square mile outside of your apartment, you don't have a lot of outside access. So what we have seen during COVID is just this isolation has just crept in and amplified. And it's turned into a real mental health crisis.
So how are the connections allowed to occur? Do you have a parent with a mentee and then the mentor goes virtual with the mentee?
So our program has always been structured in a way that we support the parent, the volunteer, and the child. So we sort of have a kind of a three-legged stool in terms of communication on a monthly basis. So from a virtual standpoint, we sort of have always been calling in to check on the health of the relationship. So the biggest shift in that is that, you know, now we're checking on the health of each person we're talking to. So we're not as concerned since most of our matches are not getting together face-to-face on was somebody there when you picked up the child. What did you do during the outing? You know, and really checking up on child safety. Right now, we're just checking out mostly on mental health. For example, our volunteers, certainly for the first couple of months, I mean, a lot of them, they didn't know if they were coming back to jobs. They're isolated. And, you know, we going back to our ideal volunteer, right? Pre-family. Most of them are single. They live alone. Now, overnight, they're sheltering in place. They don't have any roommates. They can't go to their parents because for fear of contamination. And so we did a whole lot of that proverbial adage where, you know, you put your own air mask on first, right? In the event of a plane disaster before you go to anyone else's. And so we found ourselves really triaging out our volunteers and making sure that our volunteers were safe and healthy and felt that they were in a good spot. So then our volunteers can do what they do best, right? Is support the their mentees, the youth in which they are matched with. And then, of course, then there's the family. And one of the, I guess, the best and the most tragic parts of really launching into COVID is that we had a direct line to families in needs, critical needs. So we could tell you within zip codes, certain addresses and families who are in need of food, shelter, safety, security, hotspots, tech. I mean, you name it. I mean, we were talking to mom and in most cases listening because there was just so much going on and information filters differently into different communities. So a lot of confusion, a lot of fear. So it was 360 support kind of from all angles from that perspective.
So were you able to get services for those people who needed food and connect them with organizations that could help?
Yeah, Dawn. I mean, I would say I've been asked a lot about, you know, what has COVID sort of taught you or forced us to do more. And I think as, you know, as a community, we tend to be verticalized and the nonprofit industry is no different. You know, we all sort of put our heads down and do what we do, often with less resources, right? And so one of the silver linings of COVID is it's really forced the nonprofit community to lean in, to figure out, you know, what we all do well, because we can't, certainly no one can do it alone. And then to really triage out our most vulnerable communities and figure out what role each of us play in delivering whatever is needed. And again, one of the unique opportunities we had just within our program delivery model in that it really requires communication and constant communication with families and youth and volunteers, is we were able to identify areas and really have support brought in, or we were able to get families to, I mean, there were just a ton of different events that were being put out that were providing critical needs for a lot of the families that needed them.
Tell us some cool stories about relationships between the mentor and mentee.
I'll take you up, I'll take you down, I'll take you sideways, Dawn, I'll go kind of all the way around. So, you know, on the lighter side, you know, we were just amazed at the creativity and ingenuity of some of our volunteers, you know, having to go remote. And you know, we match from a youth perspective from age 7 to 16. So, you know, you have a much different FaceTime conversation with a 15-year-old than you do with a 7 or 8-year-old. And I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, I've got a kindergartner and, you know, we started school this year and going virtual with a 6-year-old is real tough. I mean, it's tough to keep their attention. So I really give it to our volunteers. So they became TikTok dance instructors, you know, and taught me things that I'm apparently too old to understand, songs and applications and whatnot. Everyone became, you know, ad hoc science instructors. You know, how do you make slime at home with household ingredients, right? And on a more sober front, with truly so many obstacles to education, a lot of our volunteers became educational coaches. Logging on, again, back to our younger youth, logging on at 7, 8, 9 is a challenge, not only from a hardware and a connectivity standpoint, but from a calendaring standpoint. I mean, these Zooms aren't consistent. I mean, you have to be reminded, you know, every 2 hours or whatnot. So a lot of our youth, through no fault of the mom and her dad who were doing the best they can, you know, just found themselves not able to log on. So our volunteers became those educational coaches and tutors, you know, reading to them, going through math homework, you know, being that resource. And sometimes they were delivering food. One of probably the best / worst, because, you know, the best stories are always the worst, is, you know, one of our female volunteers, she and I were talking a couple months into COVID, and she went and kind of like ding dong ditched her little and left a bag of groceries on her doorstep. And her little called her later and said, "Oh my gosh, thank you so much. Wow, you bought a whole gallon of milk. God, it's going to be hard to drink it, that whole gallon today. You know, I'm good to get my brothers and sisters." And the big sister was like, "Don't drink it all today. You know, just put it in your refrigerator." And she said, "We don't have one." It helps you understand that, you know, there's so many levels of truly life that so many people are living right now. And of course, this big sister took it upon herself to go bring one of those college fridges, you know, go to Walmart. And we don't advise this isn't part of the program, but I mean, you know, in this particular instance, the next day they had a little college fridge on their front door. It just runs the gamut from just connecting from an emotional release, somebody just asking you how you're doing, to delivering groceries in some cases, helping with rent payments. I mean, we have just so many organizations that we refer our families out to help them with resources, just to kind of keep above water, if you will, during these times.
Is the demographics more boys than girls, or the other way around?
You know, Don, it's kind of interesting. So it's very close. It's 50-50. I mean, half of our little, we call them littles. So half of our mentees, our littles, are boys and half are girls. But from a waitlist perspective, almost our entire waitlist are little boys. Women are just 3 times more likely to volunteer than men. And so we're able to match women more real time where it's a little bit more difficult to recruit and attract men. So I am always, I feel like that that army slogan, I'm always looking for a few good men. We have so many little boys who currently do not have a positive male role model in their lives. And kudos to mom for bringing them into the program and recognizing that which she cannot do herself. It's heartbreaking. So I'm always looking for volunteers, and I'm certainly always looking for men.
And what are the requirements to be a volunteer, to be a one-on-one to a mentee?
Out in our community program. So you have to be 18. You have to have a driver's license. And you have to have the will and the desire. So so really, and no criminal record is really the biggest no-goes at the beginning. So what you do if you're interested is you go to our website, bbbs.org/volunteer, and you sign up for a volunteer orientation. And you come in and we tell you about the program. We talk to you a little bit about expectations and about the youth that we serve, the impact that you will have the opportunity to make should you decide to move forward. And then if you decide to keep going in the right direction, then you come in for an interview and we learn everything there is to know about you. And then up to and including what your fingerprints look like. So we can make sure that you are safe. And again, that there's no criminal record. And assuming all goes well, then we introduce you to mom and ultimately to your little brother or little sister.
And what are the benefits to the volunteer?
Oh gosh. I mean, every volunteer you talk to will tell you that the volunteers themselves get much more out of the process than they feel like they received. Although I can tell you, honestly, I entered into the program through the front door. 9 years ago, I became a big sister. And at the time, I had a career in marketing and advertising. And so I can give you my personal take. It was a time where I really wanted to invest in the community. I had some time, I had some bandwidth, and I felt like, you know, I could write a check. And believe me, if people should do that, money is essential as well. But you know, the amazing thing about mentorship, and certainly with Big Brothers Big Sisters, is that it was something that I could do personally, that I could look into the face of a young child, of a little girl, and help steer her in the right direction for her life. And the experience led me to a career shift. And gosh, I guess almost 9 years later, now I'm the CEO of this amazing organization.
What about the mentee, the benefits?
So the mentee, you know, and across the board, I mean, it is unbelievable what you do for a child when you consistently show up. So what I say, I'm going to twist this for a second. I have a lot of mentors who say, well, gosh, I don't know if I should be a mentor. Like, who am I? Like, I haven't succeeded in life, or, you know, who am I to think I could make a positive impact on a child? And I'm here to tell you that the ability to show up consistently for a young person who has not had anything consistent in their life is the key to the entire success of the relationship. One third of this country is growing up. One third of the youth in this country is growing up without a mentor. There's a huge mentoring gap, and it really doesn't matter your zip code. I have never met a successful person who did not have a stable of people who helped them get there. And so, as a mentee in our program, you get to meet an amazing man or woman or couple, as you had pointed out, who really help them focus on some of the areas that their own family may need some help with. You know, whether it's education or especially a lot of our little boys, like we talked about, don't really have a male role model. So they haven't had anyone throw the ball with them, you know, throw the baseball, throw the football. They're not enrolled in after-school sports. So when you talk about playing soccer or going to the beach, these are activities that they don't normally get to do. So as a mentee, you get this amazing role model who introduces you to life and certainly to areas of career. I have a funny anecdotal story, if you're willing. We have a corporate mentoring program at PIMCO. And I remember it was one of the first couple of weeks that we were bringing the high school students there, and they asked them, you know, what did they want to be when they you know, graduated from high school. And, you know, and some of them were like, oh, you know, they wanted to be soccer players, or, you know, a lot of careers that were very far out of reach. And they said, well, what's the metric of success? And they all started talking about the cars they were going to drive and the houses they were going to buy. And, you know, PIMCO is a pretty well-established financial institution. So they took them to like the C-level parking lot of PIMCO. And all these kids are looking around at all these cars. And they're like, oh, you could work at PIMCO and drive a car like this? And they're like, yes, you can. And is epiphany, right? That there were careers out there that were rewarding. They just hadn't been exposed to them yet. So really, that's what a mentor is. It's just someone who gives you the opportunity to see yourself successful.
Sloan, how do you want to be perceived?
That's a great question. It's a wonderful question. You know, I want to be perceived as someone who is unafraid of doing a difficult thing, of providing, and maybe the ultimate, you know, the big, what at the end of my life will I be proud of? And I will be proud of mentoring people, mentoring my team, being a mentor to a little girl, and raising a beautiful family. So I think mentorship, yeah.
Thank you, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Orange County and the Inland Empire, Chief Executive Officer Sloan Keene, for being on Impact OC. And I thank everyone for tuning in. I'm OC Talk Radio Public Affairs Director Dawn Camber. Have an impactful day.
You've been listening to Impact OC, the only program showcasing the people and organizations shaping our community. Right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio.